Design the game, the business appraisal. It's pretty straightforward. Here's why we call it a game. Randy read aloud from Jack Stack's second book, A Stake in the Outcome. The Great Game of Business was originally a phrase I used in an effort to make business a little less intimidating to people. I wanted them to see business the way I saw business. I wanted them to realize that it didn't have to be an instrument of exploitation or a tool of greed, and you didn't need an MBA to understand it. Some people outside the company later took offense to the phrase. They thought we were trivializing business by referring to it as a game. Well, there's a grain of truth to that objection. While I don't mean to trivialize business, I was certainly trying to demystify it. You know, knock it off its pedestal. I wanted to break down the walls of hype and nonsense that make business an elite sport for the select few and keep everybody else in the dark and out of the money. And I wasn't telling people anything that wasn't true. Business is a game, after all. It's not saying that it's like a game. I mean it's a game as a form of human activity. It's not an art or a science. It's a competitive undertaking with rules, ways of keeping score, elements of luck and talent, winners and losers, and all of the other characteristics of games. What's more, it can be an exciting, challenging, and as interesting and as fun as any game you can think of, provided, that is, you understand what's going on. The difference, of course, is that the stakes are higher. You're playing for a livelihood, for your family's welfare, for the future. You play for the jobs of your people you work with. You play for your customers and your customers' customers, and for the health of both your community and theirs. And you play for money, potentially lots of money. As we all know, people who play the business game well can make a fortune at it. Okay, so some of them get greedy and keep the winnings to themselves. But I wanted people to understand that business doesn't have to work that way. There was no reason you couldn't set up a company so that everyone could play the game together and share the rewards. Then, the game of business would be truly great in the full meaning of the word. As Randy set down the book, he said, "Before we can play a game, we need to understand what game we're in. So I need your input. I need your opinions and observations about the business. If I'm going to ask you all to think and act like owners, we have to treat you like owners and ask what you think. We'll grab this information through a couple of surveys. One is a practice assessment, and the other an input survey. It'll give us the perspective we need on how we are doing GGOB practices now, sort of a baseline. We need to know what we do well and not so well. We also need to know what you see as opportunities for the business and what issues we're facing. We want to know what you think are key issues facing the company for the next 6 to 12 months. This is about defining the rules of our game, understanding the rules of our business. Not only that, but you'll need to understand the language of our business too." Lee asked, "Language?" Lee was a team leader in the on-location services cleaning division. "Yes, language. There's a secret language of business, you know. Every successful business person understands it. It's the language of the financial statements. The income statement, the balance sheet, the cash flow statement. Do you want to know something incredible? These financials were created more than 500 years ago. Yet nobody ever taught you this stuff. Even me." "Don't worry, guys," Randy said as he registered terror in the eyes of half his employees. "That will happen in time. For now, we need to get your input on the realities in our business. There are other places we have to look for key issues, like doing some benchmarking." "What's benchmarking?" "Good," Randy laughed as he realized he was using jargon his people didn't know. "Benchmarking is how we understand and we stack up against the best of the best in our marketplace. We'll do this by reaching out to our industry associations, researching our competitors, talking to our customers. We'll also need to look at what our financial history is telling us. Think of all this as a 360-degree performance appraisal for our business. It's going to take several weeks for us to conduct this appraisal work and to get the data collected and analyzed and then get the results back to you. That'll give us time to collect the financial info, talk to our associates and our peer groups, and kind of dig into our customer and competitive intelligence. After fielding dozens of questions, including a number concerning, 'We've been down this road before, how's this different?' Randy addressed the elephant in the room. 'What's different? We're actually going to do something with this.' This initial appraisal process will help us get to a critical number we can all focus on, and the system of GGOB will give us the understanding, communication, and execution that will help us reach that goal together. Around the room, the question came, verbally and nonverbally. A critical number? Sorry, I got ahead of myself. The critical number is at the heart of the great game of business. It's the overarching goal of the game. If you're going to play a game, you must first understand what it means to win. When you define the critical number, you define winning. Look, business doesn't need to be any more complicated than a good game of Monopoly, provided you understand the rules, and you have a way to follow the action and keep score, and you know your stake in the outcome. In a nutshell, those are the elements of any game and are principles behind the great game of business. Randy pointed to a poster of the great game of business process that was hanging on the wall. It was three interlocking ovals with the critical number at the center of the Venn diagram. Winning is a process, and it all starts with your input. Can I count on your candid responses? It wasn't a resounding yes, but it would do. Randy knew that it would take time for his people to embrace the idea. Great, so let's get started, said Randy. Focus on the critical number. Thursday, employees received a group text before the meeting. Gerald, as usual, was running 15 minutes late, signaling his continued passive-aggressive campaign against the great game. He seemed to be fighting it, subtly at every turn. When everyone finally got together, someone asked, what do we do with all this information? Randy said, we're lucky to have Sam with us now to help us walk through the GGOB process. He's been through this critical number exercise a dozen times at his previous company, and we think he'll add a lot to seeing us through it. The agenda was laid out, and the coffee was served. Path to the critical number. Sam began, guys, we're going to get some clarity on what our goals are for the next 6 to 12 months, and we'll get it by considering our financial trends, the input from our people, and of course our marketplace. Each area gives us a different perspective on our business. Again, think of it as a 360-degree performance appraisal for our business. We'll walk out of this room with one, or at most two, critical numbers for the business. So Gerald asked, so what the hell's a critical number? As if he hadn't even been present for the recent company-wide meeting. Randy answered, Gerald, it's the one thing that defines winning for our business in the coming year. Some people we talk to think of it as a weakness that needs to be driven out of the company. Others think of it as an opportunity to pursue. What we're looking for is that number, which at any given time will have the greatest impact on our business. The discussion rolled around the room as the team came to grips with what critical number means. From around the room, comments and questions arose. But won't our critical number always be the bottom line, profit? I read the book you gave me. Stack says in the book that the objective of a business is to make money and generate cash. Why aren't those our critical numbers, Randy? Randy smiled and answered her. Look, guys, there's no wrong answer here. We need to come to grips with what our issues are in the business and focus on the most important. We could just pick a number, sure, but if we don't go through this process and really explore all the different perspectives and get our people's input, we could end up being dead right. Kevin, head of the Emergency Restoration Services Division, asked a good question. Dead right? Don't you mean dead wrong? No, dead right. We'd be right, but we'd be dead. Because our team didn't buy into the critical number we came up with in the ivory tower. Remember, people support what they help create. Dan added, good point. It'll be hard for anyone to say, oh, that's management's number, if they had a hand in creating it. Sam said, look, profit will always be important. The team's always got to be thinking about making money and generating cash. But we also need our people focused on what will make our company stronger by addressing our key issues and eliminating our weaknesses. In fact, profit will undoubtedly be impacted by our critical number. It's how we're going to be generating profit that's important. Here's an example. If we made all our profit from one big customer, would profit still be our critical number? The room was quiet while people thought about it. Sam continued, what would happen if that customer went out of business? What if they fired us? The entire room seemed to answer, we'd be out of business. Sam was ecstatic with the quick response. Exactly! So what would our critical number be then? Obviously, to get away from just one customer, get all of our eggs out of that basket, Kevin declared. Everyone in the room nodded in agreement. Bingo, Sam shouted. The meeting continued. The team got out all the data, discussed it, and put it on big flip chart paper. The writing was literally on the wall, and everyone was beginning to see what the information was telling them. The whole company had been built around the Emergency Restoration Services Division's responses to fires, floods, and the damage that natural disasters caused. It's what they called their emergency code blue work. But everyone in the room knew how scary that was. The numbers showed that they'd experienced a couple of years with major drops in the number of emergencies and natural disasters, conditions they had absolutely no control over. Everyone knew that counting on natural disasters to pay for all their overhead was no way to grow a business. They had to face reality. When they compared themselves to their industry, they quickly saw that other parts of their business were not up to par either. The dry cleaning plant's margins and expenses were out of line with their peers in the industry. They were getting their butts kicked. They were using a lot more resources to produce the same output as similar dry cleaning operations. Someone muttered jokingly, "We're being taken to the cleaners," to which Gerald shot a pointed glance, as the dry cleaning operation was his responsibility. Sam began to further organize the discussion on the large flip chart papers. One was marked financial issues, and he started to capture the issues that the financial trends and their industry benchmark data were pointing out. He wrote, "Financial issues. Operating expenses as compared to the industry are too high. Dry cleaning ops underperforming. Gross margin almost 5 percentage points below the industry. Another point, we're undercapitalized due to the loan taken out to buy out Randy's father." After combing through the employee and management input, other issues surfaced and the picture became even clearer. He made another chart, marketplace issues. And underneath, he wrote, "The company heavily reliant on code blue business. Lack of focus on large accounts. Lack of effort towards cross-selling services." Under operational issues, he wrote, "Cost in the dry cleaning plant are not being controlled, particularly in labor and supplies. We need a better control on expense to help manage through the downturn." He wrote on another flip chart, "People issues," under which he wrote, "More accountability, implement GGOB. Leverage the Code Blue technical expertise in other areas." Sam now directed, "You've seen how we stack up against the marketplace and what our people have to say about the business. Now we'll prioritize the issues. Let's take a break, and when we return, based on what you see on the flip charts, let's come back with what you believe are the top three issues we need to focus on for the next 6 to 12 months. During the break, the conversations ranged from excitement to anxiousness to hesitancy, but everyone seemed to be on board. When they reconvened, Sam had everyone call out what they saw as the top three issues of the company. As they were collected, repeated items were given hash marks to indicate that multiple people had seen it as an issue. The result was one flip chart with the team's top issues. They read, "Top issues, poor financial performance in the dry cleaning operation. Opportunity to improve cross-selling to existing customers. Company too reliant on code blue business. Operating expenses as a percent of sales are high compared to our industry peers. And finally, undercapitalized due to the additional debt for the purchase of the business." Randy took over. "So which of these issues will have the biggest impact on the business? What is the one thing that if we don't address it, nothing else will matter?" The discussions ensued, trying to nail down the one big thing. He summarized, "We've been relying on the dollars coming in from emergency restoration for too long, guys. The data shows that, doesn't it? Bottom line, one bad year in the restoration business will put us at risk." You could have heard a pin drop. Everyone in the room knew it was true but didn't want to admit it, or perhaps lacked the courage to deal with it. The team knew they couldn't count on fires, floods, and tornadoes. But they could really see now, through the flip chart, and most of the issues identified were symptoms of their unhealthy dependency on emergency code blue business. The much bigger issue in the business, they realized, was how to diversify away from code blue business. With Sam's experience leading these discussions, he pressed further. "So if diversifying away from code blue business is our biggest issue, how do we define or quantify it?" Dan, the head of On Location Services Division, suggested more sales outside of Code Blue business. From across the room, CFO Deborah said, "Is it sales or is it margin? If dry cleaning performed like the industry shows it could, we'd have more margin." Gerald bristled at the comment. "Oh, I get it. Now you're going to put this all on me." Randy interjected immediately, knowing Gerald's mindset. "No, we are all in this together. We win or lose as a team, remember?" The discussion continued with a volley of questions, answers, and suggestions. The beauty of it was the interaction. Unlike Randy's father, who would simply dictate the goals of the business, Randy was pulling the answers from his people. They were an integral part of the process. Meredith, an assistant manager, asked a great question. "What if we could generate enough non-Code Blue business to cover all of our overhead? Then all the Code Blue we get would be gravy, wouldn't it?" Everyone looked at Meredith as if she was a genius. "That's right. As long as we think of our target as non-Code Blue margin rather than revenue." "So it's settled. Non-Code Blue margin is our critical number. Agreed?" Randy was proud to see that everyone was nodding in agreement. Before Randy could continue, Gerald challenged, "There's no way we could cover our overhead like that this year." Sam countered quickly, "No, but could we reduce our dependency on Code Blue margin by half this year, and maybe more next year?" The sentiment around the room seemed to be, "Can we do that?" Sam said, "Look, guys, we don't have to solve this critical number 100% the first year. Any improvement at all is still a win in my book. So what's possible?" Dan looked around. "I don't know, maybe reduce it by a quarter?" Meredith asked, "Okay, so let me ask a dumb question. Where would the other money come from? You know, if we're going to focus outside our Code Blue business, where will all the additional non-Code Blue margin come from?" Randy suggested, "Maybe that's for the whole team to answer." Act on the right drivers. That evening, Randy was reflecting on the critical number meeting. Seeing his team piling on the company's issues was inspiring. Who would have thought that they would have come up with something as sophisticated sounding as non-Code Blue gross margin? So simple and easy to understand, but also really powerful in changing the company. He thought to himself, "We've always talked about going after more dry cleaning business and cross-selling, but every time a tornado siren or fire alarm goes off, everyone mobilizes to get the job done, and those ideas go out the window. Now we have a rallying cry that everyone can see and understand and connect to. It's like a big central theme for the whole team to link back to, no matter how busy they are. What an incredible focus we'll have." Something unexpected was happening too. Randy started to feel less stressed out. Usually it was this time of night where he would quietly fret about the business. His heart would pound in his chest as he lay awake in bed feeling completely alone and isolated. Now he felt like his people were starting to get it, and he knew there were 6 other people across town lying awake tonight as well. What a great feeling, he thought, as he drifted off. The next morning, the management team was already there when Randy pulled in, everyone but Gerald. They couldn't wait to get started. "You know what's really cool about this critical number stuff, Randy? What I like about it is we're always being pulled in a million directions. Now at least we know the one thing we just gotta do," Dan continued. It was clear Dan had been up all night thinking about it. "Sure makes it a heck of a lot easier to know what we really need to focus on." This was huge. Randy had been good at setting goals and making sure everyone knew their jobs, but he never really set the agenda for the business, shared the strategy, or set expectations on a big scale. Randy was anxious to see what others thought about what they'd come up with. Even more important, he was excited to see what each of the manager's teams would come up with to tackle the issues. After all, this is what GGOB was all about. He thought to himself, "We went through this process of collecting data, opinions, information, and intelligence. The team got really smart about their business and were able to reach a consensus on what they should focus on. Now they're going to get their whole team's creative input on how to achieve their goals." Randy felt like he was tapping the intellectual capacity that was right under his nose for the first time. "So what do we do today?" seemed to be the sentiment from the team. Well, we start by teaching everybody what our critical number is, what it means, and why it's so very important to the business. Then we need to ask each and every one of our employees what they think they could do to help us reach the goal. That week, the managers started by getting their departments together and going through an exercise to figure out what they could do, both individually and as a team, to influence the critical number and bottom-line financial results. In the on-location services division, Dan explained to his team the entire critical number process. He started by sharing with his team the results of the survey they took and the issues that were identified. He went on to explain how the management team had worked through the issues and selected a critical number, a company-wide goal that everyone would have a stake in, and how on-location services could help achieve the goal that was the critical number, non-code blue gross margin. Non-code blue what? Laughed Lee, one of the lead carpet cleaners. Lee had said what most of the employees in the room were thinking. Dan laughed too, and explained the idea behind building gross margin outside of emergency services. So, what's gross margin? Asked June. She was an outspoken associate. Gross margin is the money we have left after a sale, after we pay labor and materials, what we call our cost of goods sold, or COGS for short. So if we clean a carpet for a customer for $150, and it costs us $75 by the time we're done with the time it takes, the chemicals it takes, and whatnot, how much do we have left? June replied, "Easy, Dan, that's $75. Everyone nodded in agreement. That's gross margin. Pretty simple, isn't it? Sales minus our direct cost is gross margin. How do you think we could improve that margin?" Sandy, the janitor, cried out, "Charge more!" Lee said, "Reuse the chemicals?" June added, "Do stuff right the first time. You know, make sure we don't make mistakes." "Wait a minute. Do we make half on everything we do?" Dan said, "No, different services produce different margins. Why?" "Well, why don't we just sell more of the stuff that do have the highest margins? You know, the stuff we make our most money on." Dan was impressed. "Wow, June, that's pretty good." June went on. "What are the highest margin services?" In a heartbeat, Dan's assistant manager, Bill, piped up. "That's easy, Scotchgard." "Scotchgard?" Bill replied, "Yep, hands down. We make 75% on every Scotchgard application we do. I've been bitching at you guys for years to upsell every customer, but you won't ever listen." "Well, we didn't know we made 75% on it either," laughed Lee. And so it went. All through the organization, meetings were producing amazingly simple but impactful ideas, drivers that could really affect the critical number. They were collected on a sheet that showed everyone their direct line of sight to the critical number, how each department and each employee connected to non-code blue gross margin. For the on-location services division, it was upsell more Scotchgard. For emergency restorations, it was cross-sell our restoration clients to our other services. And for dry cleaning, it was get a handle on our cost of supplies. Once posted, these drivers were fleshed out by having the teams nail down how they'd measure their activities. People were getting excited, but it wasn't long before someone asked, "So, if we help the company make more money, what's in it for us?" Sam answered, "Great question. There's a lot in it for all of us. First is job security. As you saw in the industry data, we are not performing up to snuff with our peers. Eventually, we'd have to change or our competitors will eat our lunch. Second, if we create a plan and go after it, we should be able to beat the market. And if we beat the market, we deserve better than market compensation. Randy is willing to give us all a stake in the outcome, a share, a part of that additional money in the form of a bonus plan. We're starting to work on that next. It's going to take us a while, as a management team, to get GGOB together since we've got to finish the budget and the annual plan and work on the company scoreboards and, of course, design the bonus plan. But we'll get it done." Gerald snapped, "I believe it when I see it, but okay, how long is a while?" "We're talking about 30 days or so, but bear with us, we're new at this too. There's something we're going to do right away, though, right here in our own department. In fact, all the departments will have their own mini-game." create an early win with minigames. The managers were excited about the great game, but they were terrified about what would happen if people didn't get engaged around the critical number. The team realized that it was going to take some time to finish the bonus plan and create the scoreboards and then to start the huddles, learn how to forecast, and so on. They were concerned that they would lose employees along the way while the team was designing the big game. They knew that they were going to need some way to keep people interested, to keep them engaged. So why not play a series of smaller games while management worked on the big game? That is where minigames came in. As Tom had explained when the team visited his IT company, minigames were just like the big game, with all the same elements, but in microcosm. The minigames had a goal, rules, scoreboards, and a reward for winning. They were usually set around an operational or financial number that were drivers of the company-wide critical number and played out at the departmental or workgroup level. Randy liked them because minigames were short-term in length, generally 60 to 90 days. Employees could start playing these right away and give the management team a chance to design and refine the rest of the great game. In the on-location services division, since they realized ScotchGuard applications had high margins and customers liked the service, they realized it was a great opportunity to create an early win. Dan and Bill had pulled together some numbers on how many ScotchGuard upsells their team had done in the past year. They were embarrassed when they discovered that only 1 in 10 customers actually bought ScotchGuard historically. "Why don't we sell more? I mean, it's as easy as saying, 'Do you want fries with that?'" Dan asked. Lee, one of the field leaders, said, "Dan, I didn't even know it was that important. It's not that hard to do. I mean, the carpet cleaning itself is the labor-intensive part. Had I known we made so much money on ScotchGuard, I would have suggested it to everyone. I'm sure that half our customers would say yes if we just asked them the right way. It's really good stuff." Dan asked, "Are you saying we could go from upsales of 10% to 50% of every job we do?" "Absolutely," Lee said, getting buy-in as he looked around the room at the other field leaders. So there's our improvement goal, our X to Y by win for this minigame. We want to go from 10% to 50%. In other words, instead of 1 in 10 customers taking ScotchGuard, we think up to 5 may take it, right? Everyone nodded. "Okay, I think we should play it for 90 days. So we can get really good at the upselling, to drive the critical number," Dan declared. The carpet team began to work through the minigame process. After only 10 minutes of brainstorming, they dubbed the game Scotch on the Rocks and sketched out a scoreboard. It took the shape of a giant tumbler that would be filled with ice cubes, each ice cube representing a new ScotchGuard customer. Every time a customer bought the upsell, the name would go on that ice cube, and then it would be put into the glass. Lee offered to make the scoreboard and the ice cubes out of poster board. They decided to add a section at the bottom that would display the total non-code blue gross margin dollars that new customers would bring in. They made 3 levels of Scotch to represent 30, 60, and 90 days. The team could easily see if they were winning the game by how many rocks were in the glass. Everyone was excited by the idea. The team decided the best place for the scoreboard was in the break room, where it could be seen easily by every employee every day. In fact, they could have a short 10-minute stand-up huddle around it each day, updating it with the new customers and dollars, and sharing what was working and what wasn't out in the field. The best part was that it was so simple anyone could see at a glance if they were winning or losing. In the 3 months they'd be playing the game, they knew they'd service about 150 customers, and their goal was to upsell 50% of them. That meant that they needed 75 customer upsells, or rocks in the glass. 75 customers times the average ScotchGuard price of $200 equaled $15,000 in additional revenue, or $11,250 in gross margin. And all of it was non-code blue gross margin. "There's our goal," Dan exclaimed. Everyone got it immediately, and they could visualize how simple it would be to drop another ice cube or rock into the glass every time they made an upsell. Beth, one of the carpet team leaders, cried out, "Holy cow, are you saying the minigame prize is $11,000? Dan clarified, smiling, "That'd be great, Beth, but no. The $11,250 goes toward funding our critical number and our bonus pool. The management team is working on that now, though it may take us a little while to get it finished. But we'll make sure this all gets counted. It'll be retroactive. There's still going to be a reward for winning this minigame, and that's what the team will decide. The way minigames work best is to create prize levels of rewards that we can win along the way, with each incrementally better than the last. Sam showed me an example of one that started with a ball cap, went to a t-shirt, then to a jacket, and ended with everyone going to a ball game together. What do you think the rewards should be? Sam handed each employee a copy of the minigames design checklist, and they completed it quickly. There were 7 items. Number 1, name the game, the improvement objective. They named it Scotch on the Rocks, upsell Scotch Guard treatment to customers. Number 2, set the goal, X to Y by when, from 15 customers to 75 customers in 90 days. Number 3, estimate the benefit, the potential impact or return to the business, $11,250 in non-code blue gross margin. Number 4, identify the players, those who can impact the goal. In this case, the players were the on-location services team. Number 5, determine the time frame, long enough to change behavior. They chose 90 days. Number 6, create a theme and build a scoreboard. Be creative. Their scoreboard was a huge Scotch tumbler filled with customer rocks or ice cubes. Scotch will fill the glass at 30, 60, and 90-day intervals. If the rocks exceed the Scotch, we win that level prize. Number 7, decide on the reward. Think low on cash, high on fun, and make it memorable. The team chose at the 30-day mark to have a mocktail party on Friday of the first month. At 60 days, rocks on the house. This was 10 of your favorite rock songs on an iTunes card. And at 90 days, the big win was a giant party at Dave & Buster's to celebrate winning the minigame. The entire team was getting excited now. They had a goal, a scoreboard, a huddle schedule, and fun prizes that they had all agreed upon. Because the team who would play the game helped design it, buy-in was very high. Success seemed attainable, and the prizes cost very little in the scheme of things. Dan reminded everyone, small wins add up to big wins. If we hit these goals, we'll have fun, learn a good habit, and add to our annual bonus pool at the same time. Provide a stake in the outcome, rewards and recognition. The great game of business was already working. Mini games like Scotch on the Rocks were running in almost every department in the company, and energy was high. Scotch Guard upsells had doubled in 1 week. That got everybody's attention, but the managers were amped up to do even more. Dry cleaning's minigame was taking it to the cleaners, and emergency restoration team was scrolling for dollars, a game that involved reaching out to their database for cross-selling opportunities in their downtime. After a week of working with the employees on understanding the critical number and how they could influence it, momentum was building. Some really solid ideas were emerging, and people were becoming engaged. Since minigames were in place, Randy knew he had to press forward and reassemble the management team around designing the rest of the game, the scoreboards, huddling, forecasting, and especially the rewards and recognition. Randy thought to himself, I can't wait to change my bonus plan. Theirs had never worked. It hadn't changed behavior or made any impact on the business. His dad had been giving discretionary bonuses for years, and of course people felt entitled to them, regardless of whether the company was doing well or poorly. Randy simply hadn't had a better way or the courage to make a change. The old bonus system was disconnected from the performance of the business. He wondered how many years he'd paid bonuses while he was in the hole. It was time to bring out the big guns and design an effective bonus plan. It was important to him that he didn't screw this part of the game up. Randy was grateful to have Sam on his team. Sam had designed numerous GGOB bonus plans at his previous company. Even better, Sam had been instrumental in teaching employees to understand the process, too. He'd also incorporated the great game budget and bonus tools he had used in the past. At the next management meeting, Randy told everyone, "Bonus programs are big concepts to get your head wrapped around. I want you to really understand how ours works, because you'll be responsible for teaching all our people." Sam jumped in to emphasize a very important lesson he learned at his previous company. "Guys, people's understanding of their bonus plan is the biggest reason bonus plans succeed or fail. The success of this bonus plan will have everything to do with how well we communicate it and teach it. If they don't get it, or can't follow what's happening, or don't believe they can impact it, we may as well give them a Jelly of the Month Club and hope for the best." Everyone chuckled, catching the reference to the classic scene in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Randy added, "You saw the results of this during our trip to Tom's company. All the employees knew exactly how they were progressing on their critical number and could calculate their potential bonus every week. They had a clear understanding of where the opportunities were and how they could directly impact the score and what their rewards would be. Wasn't that impressive?" The entire team nodded in agreement. "For this bonus plan to work, you will all need to feel very confident in your ability to understand and teach it to your people. If you don't believe in it, nobody will. Sam and I are going to put together the first draft of our bonus plan based on the concepts in the book. I want each of you to go back into the Great Game of Business and read the chapter entitled, Skip the Praise, Give Us the Raise. It does a great job in explaining the general philosophy of how rewards should be provided while ensuring that jobs and the security of the business doesn't suffer. You'll see that creating a good, solid bonus plan isn't as simple as make a dollar, share a dollar." The next day, the management team reconvened. They were all excited to talk about what their business plan would look like. Randy began by asking, "What did you get out of the book?" Meredith said, "Well, the obvious concept is that we use the bonus to rally people around a common goal. In our case, non-code blue gross margin. It needs to be a team effort. Everyone has the same big goals tied to the same big rewards, and we have to work together to achieve them. We either win together or we don't win at all." Dan continued, "Our bonus plan needs to ensure the long-term financial security of the company, then share a significant portion of the gain. To me, that's job security first, then bonus." Other team members told what they got out of the book as well. Gerald added, "Give people a chance to earn a bonus early and often." Kevin said, "Always celebrate the win and be sure to recognize the players. And communicate, communicate, communicate." Fantastic, everyone. Great job. We're going to be touching on each of these concepts. Let's start with what Sam and I have been developing. We first took the annual financial plan that all of us have been working on for the past couple of months. As you know, this year we're projecting to end the year with a top-line revenue of $7.7 million and a profit of $590,000. We've all agreed growth of 10% is achievable for a top-line target of $8.5 million in revenue. Based on what you say we need to support that growth, we came up with $650,000 in bottom-line profit before tax. Randy added, "Our focus this year is to meet, or better, beat that $650,000 profit number while increasing our non-code blue work." So the bonus program that Sam and I have drafted is designed around achieving those two critical numbers. We'd like to provide our people with an opportunity to earn up to 20% of their wages in bonus. Half the bonus, or 10% of their wages, will be tied to the company's overall profit. The other half will be tied to us improving our non-code blue gross margin. This way, we're keeping people focused on how this business makes money and what they can do to impact it, as well as eliminating a weakness in our business. There's a big difference in how bonuses work in the game and the way we used to do things. In the past, we gave out discretionary bonuses as a percent of profit, a profit-sharing program. You know, make a dollar, share a dollar. Sam said, "In the great game of business, we must first set a minimum threshold of profit before any bonus can be paid." Gerald shot back, "Hold on a second, Sam. If all the expenses are being covered and you're showing a profit, aren't we entitled to a share of it?" Randy leaned forward. "Gerald, where do you think all that profit goes?" "Huh?" Gerald stammered. "Well, like, you know," he almost blurted out, "your two vacations and your wife's new car." But instead, he finished it with, "like additional income for you, Randy." "This is what Open Book is all about," Sam said with a smile. "First of all, almost half the profit will go to pay the tax man." Randy stepped in and said, "Look, Gerald, it took a long time for me to really put the pieces together on this. There are investments this business needs to make and that are beyond expenses on the P&L. There's equipment, facilities, inventories, and yes, a return on the investment for shareholders. All these things need to be addressed for the long-term growth and security of the business before we're in a position to fund a bonus plan. Think of it as setting a threshold, a baseline. If we understand the nut we have to cover, we know where a bonus plan can safely start," Sam stated. "Now you can see what we mean by self-funding the bonus. We don't pay a penny out until our obligations are met, safeguarding the long-term financial security of the company first. It goes back to save jobs, create wealth, share wealth." Dan said, "Okay, I get it. What's our threshold?" Sam and I worked through the plan and determined what cash buckets we need to fill next year. Aside from tax, there's accounts receivable, or money that's earned but customers haven't sent us the check. Another bucket is debt. In our case, we have to pay off some of the loan I took out to buy the company from my dad. We also have some investments in inventories and capital expenditures, things like new trucks, equipment, computers, and such. The final bucket to be filled is a fair return for the owners. After adding it all up, our threshold totaled $550,000. Meredith shook her head. "I cannot believe how much profit we have to generate just to maintain this business. That's incredible. This is going to be a big idea for us to understand as employees. I know it is for me." Sam looked serious as he said, "Yes, it is. And everyone won't understand it tomorrow. But in time and with some teaching, everyone will learn it. If we don't do it now, entitlement will creep in and haunt us forever. We'll battle the misconception that Randy's walking out of here with $500,000 a year." Kevin said, "Got it, Sam, but I'd really like to get back to that 20% bonus thing. How do we get that?" "We want to make our bonus significant enough to keep people in the game. Maybe 10% of wages, or if we really blow it out of the water, up to 20% of wages. That could be as much as an additional month or two of pay. For example, if 10% of wages is the top end of our bonus pool for our non-code blue gross margin critical number, and payroll is $1.1 million, that gives us a potential maximum bonus pool of $110,000. That means we'd have to generate $220,000 in additional gross margin since 50% goes to the team and 50% goes to the company. Now we know our stretch target for a max bonus payout. Now divide that into 10 levels, each worth 1% of wages. That's a lot of potential wins." Sam went on to say that they should translate the percentages into how many additional hours or days pay each level represented rather than just a percentage of wages. Folks on the floor think in different terms, so why not put it in their language? Kevin wondered, "How do you determine the payout?" "Randy and I are proposing an SRC-style quarterly payout," Sam said. "This is what I like most about the great game of business," Randy said. "Typically, in the past, we'd wait until the end of the year, after the books were closed, to see if there was anything left. Then we might pay a discretionary bonus. See how removed all that is from the behaviors that funded the bonus? We want to reward our folks close to the time frame in which their behaviors created the results. For example, if our team can drive improvements in their first quarter, I want to reward them as soon as possible so they can see how their performance directly impacted their reward. We accomplish this in two ways. First, we'll structure the plan in incremental wins or levels so that it's not all or nothing. Every improvement is a win. Second, we'll make progressive payouts so that people will stay engaged. We'll start with 10% of the pool the first quarter and progressively ramp it up. 20% the second quarter, 30% the third quarter, 40% the fourth quarter. Plus, it's cumulative. In other words, if you miss a bonus one quarter, you can make it up the next." Randy handed out the draft bonus plan he'd been working on with Sam. It showed all the levels and payouts possible. What was especially exciting was that the team got really energized thinking about how their people were going to get into this. The looks around the room varied from excitement to concern. Sam saw Meredith struggling with the concept and asked what she was concerned about. She asked, "Doesn't it still come back to goals being reasonable and achievable? I'm not so sure if our people will see this as achievable. Can we really add $220,000 in profit on top of an already big profit goal. Sam replied, "So let's find out. Add it all up. You guys have been talking with your teams about how they can help drive non-Code Blue gross margin. How much can we get from the Scotchgard idea? How much margin can on-location services provide if we get that hospital account? What about cross-selling opportunities? There's another $50,000 in potential gross margin there. Hey, remember the benchmarking data? It indicated we were several points higher than the industry on operating expenses. There's a real opportunity to pick up another $20,000 just by cutting costs. Gerald, I know that you might think it's a little optimistic, but your people came up with $25,000 in efficiencies in the dry cleaning plant as well." Randy added, "One thing Tom pointed out about playing the game is that when they tracked and measured their expenses every week, they were able to find opportunities they never would have thought were there." You just gave me enough in 5 minutes to fund 50% of the bonus pool. I think there's much more possible out there than what we've listed here. It's now up to all of us to identify what those opportunities are and help our people understand how their efforts and ideas can fund their bonus. Randy asked, "What do you think, Meredith? Is it achievable? Is it reasonable?" Meredith replied, "I think so. It seems reasonable considering that the first few payout levels are well within what we've achieved before. And now that we've identified these new opportunities to get us there, I'm more confident that it's achievable." Sam said, "This is great, guys. Everyone loves a good bonus, but let's remember that many times cash isn't the only motivator." Kevin smiled as he said, "It isn't? You need to tell that to my wife." Everyone laughed. Sam replied, "There's a money side of providing a stake in the outcome, sure. But there are other components that are just as important. Three things we simply cannot overlook are understanding, involvement, and recognition." Dan said, "Sam, I gotta say, we're pretty good at recognition. You know, letting people know we appreciate them. It's part of our culture." "I get that, Dan, but let me explain. We just figured out a pretty awesome bonus plan, right? Well, if our people don't get it, if they really can't understand it, and they can't keep up with it as we play, we're sunk. We must be vigilant about teaching and communicating this plan, and to keep encouraging folks to keep reaching for the goal. The teaching and the learning never ends. That's understanding." He went on, "The next thing to pay attention to is involvement. Being involved and informed is a huge part of keeping people engaged. Everyone wants to know their opinion matters. Being valued and involved shows employees that the company respects them and trusts them to make the right decisions. And that's empowering and motivating." People were nodding their heads as Sam continued. "The third motivator, beyond a cash bonus, is recognition. Dan, you said it best. It's part of the culture Randy's created here. We need to be sure we identify and acknowledge people's efforts in reaching our collective goals by celebrating our wins and recognizing our players. For people to pitch in and really give their full and immediate attention, they must know without question that they will be recognized and appreciated for the contributions they make. We have got to make sure we make it a big deal. You know, really celebrate when we win. Let's make sure people feel like winners. That's what people will want to replicate. They'll know exactly what behaviors got them the rewards, their recognition, and they'll be proud and want to do it again." The entire management team had a lot to think about. Dan summed up their feelings with, "Now I get it. This really explains why Jack Stack calls it a stake in the outcome. This is way bigger than just a bonus plan." Keep Score, Design the Scoreboard. It was hard to believe they were already 30 days into the process, and they were just starting to work on the scoreboard. It was exciting, though, to see how much progress the employees were making on the mini-games they had created. They were already getting the critical number and were moving the needle. Now that the bonus plan was hammered out, the management team had reconvened to discuss how they would keep score. Sam began to recount his previous experience with the game. "When you visited the company I used to work for, you couldn't help but see the scoreboards. The walls and halls were plastered with them. We probably should have owned stock in a whiteboard company." Everyone smiled as they pictured it. He went on, "We were fanatics about keeping score. Everybody wanted to know if we were winning or losing. It was as if we flipped the idea of scorekeeping on its head. It wasn't management scoring teams, it was the teams scoring themselves. The employees owned it. They kept score, made scoreboards, and man, the scoreboards were everywhere. Kevin asked, "What all did you score?" Sam recalled, "Well, of course there was the big company-wide financial scoreboard that told us if we were making money. That was in the cafeteria, where we could all live with it every day. Right next to that was a scoreboard highlighting our critical number. You know, it was really visual to communicate our progress. I remember one year we painted different colors on the cinder block wall, block by block, as we gained on our critical number, like a giant Tetris game." Randy added, "As you'd walk out into that business, you'd see with the scoreboards out in the shop were cascaded throughout every department. In fact, it was like reverse cascading." Is reverse cascading even a word? Anyway, I mean the numbers were flowing up instead of down, because they fed information from each team and department up into the company-wide scoreboard. Dan was animated. "Yeah, I could see that at Tom's IT company. It was really cool to see the individual scoreboards. They called them playbooks, I think, which led to the team forecast and the departmental scoreboard. And then we saw it all come together at the huddle on the big financial scoreboard." Gerald joined in. "My people already have dashboards on their computers, but I'm not sure anyone is using them. Nobody sees them. It seems like having them really visible is important." "That's exactly right, Gerald. It's a lot about visibility," answered Randy. "Make it where people can't help but see the score, and you'll get accountability. Winners are fanatics about keeping score. My college football coach would say, if you're not keeping score, it's just practice. People play differently when they're keeping score." Sam continued, "There's one more type of scoreboard. Speaking of Tom's company, you know you're at a real GGOB company when you can't turn the corner without running into a minigame scoreboard." Meredith laughed out loud. "No kidding. Literally run into a scoreboard. At Tom's place, I bumped into a deer. One of his IT groups was hunting for customers and used a full-size deer decoy on a pull cart with a painted target on the side. It was awesome." Randy refocused the team. "Okay, Sam, we get it. Scoreboards are important. Where do we start?" "There are three steps in designing a good scoreboard. First, what do we think is important to score? Second, who's going to own the score? And third, how do we make the scoreboards forward-looking? First, let's give some thought to our financial scoreboard. This will show our people if we're winning or losing as a company. In other words, are all our efforts making us money? This scoreboard will be a simplified version of our financial statements, starting with the income statement. Simplified, meaning we won't fill it out with every general ledger item, just the major line items or categories that represent the important results or outcomes that have the biggest impact on our company. The aim is to make clear where and how financial outcomes are created. We'll teach everyone how money comes into the business and goes out of the business and what's left afterward." Sam added, "Having company scoreboards that only track operational numbers or key performance indicators is like going to a baseball game and the scoreboard only shows errors or the number of outs but doesn't report runs scored." Sam brought out the GGOB scoreboard template to begin the process. The group took the financial statements and began to group line items into categories, looking for ways to simplify and to focus on the 20% of line items that drove 80% of the results. After 30 minutes of work, the scoreboard was already taking shape. Gerald asked, "Sam, this is starting to look a lot like our end-of-month financial statements. What makes it different?" Sam said, "There's one big difference. These are forward-looking financials. Our end-of-the-month numbers are historical. You know what the problem with history is, don't you?" Meredith blurted out, "Yeah, you can't change it." "Exactly," Randy said. "Now you know the difference. With our financial scoreboard, we'll be forecasting how the month will end, and we'll do it every single week. That's how the great game of business helps us control our destiny. If something's going right, we can leverage it, and if something's going wrong, we have time to fix it." Sam addressed some puzzled looks in the room. "We'll be spending a lot of time learning forecasting, guys. Don't worry. For now, let's finish our scoreboard." They had built a simplified income statement from top line to bottom line. Now they had to bring it to life. The team established line item ownership, or who was going to be responsible for tracking and forecasting that number. Gerald, you're dry cleaning. Dan is on location services. Kevin, you're restoration. They continued down the entire sheet, establishing a name for each line item, including all the direct cost and operating expenses. Kevin quipped, "Seems like Deborah ought to have most of these lines because the CFO is the only one who has all these numbers." Deborah spoke up and, with a smirk, said, "I knew this was going to make more work for me." "It's not about who can access the numbers, guys. It's about who can influence the numbers. That's why we call it line item ownership. You own it. You're accountable for it. I am certain that Deborah can support us on gathering and understanding the numbers, but they will be generated by all of you." Sam was pointing at each person on the team as he spoke. Deborah sighed with relief. From left to right, the next column on the financial scoreboard was the plan. This number came from the month-by-month budget Randy and Sam had worked out earlier. Sam stated, "The plan represents our goal, the target, what we're shooting for all year. The plan is fixed. It will not change throughout the year. Every week, we'll be forecasting against the plan, looking for variances, good or bad." Sam continued, "Now it gets fun. The next five columns, from left to right, are how we use the scoreboard to encourage everyone to begin looking forward. This is what makes GGOB so different. This is the third step in designing a good scoreboard." Randy added, "Most companies steer their businesses while facing backward. They tend to measure the past, telling them only what's happened. They can't see what's coming at them, only what's already hit them." Dan asked, "So we'll put up our weekly results each week, right?" "Wrong, but great guess." Sam went on, "No, we want you to come back each week and give us a forecast of how the month will end. That way, we'll have time to make moves during the month as the score changes. We'll forecast the month every week and put it in its own column. Great Game calls it forward forecasting. The practice is so nice they named it twice." Gerald protested, "What? So you want us to be fortune tellers? How can Kevin predict a fire or a tornado?" "Look, don't get hung up on the word forecast. If forecast bothers you, forget it. What I want you to do is give me your opinion of what's going to happen. And Gerald, I know you have an opinion." Randy stood on what he said. It took a moment, but Gerald had to laugh, as he knew it was true. "Yeah, I'll give you that." "We'll get into that when we start huddling. Let's finish the scoreboard." With that, Sam wrapped up with a column for actual and a column to the far right for variance. This is where the team would see how they varied from the plan and their latest forecast, good or bad. "Aren't we forgetting something?" asked Deborah. "What?" replied Kevin. "Our critical number," came Deborah's response. Sam smiled. "I was wondering when somebody would mention that. We made it through every line item without calling our critical number. Since it's based on gross margin, we could put it right here on our scoreboard. We can break the margin into two lines, code blue gross margin and non-code blue gross margin. We can also include a few drivers that directly influence non-code blue gross margin in our cost of goods sold. Make sense?" By now, the entire management team was very comfortable with non-code blue gross margin and nodded in agreement. As we huddle each week, it will really help us to know how we're tracking our critical number year to date. We'll add a few lines at the bottom to capture this. One thing is for sure, if we measure it, we'll move it. With this line, everyone can track how we're progressing toward bonus. Next, we'll call it out even more by building a themed critical number scoreboard. You know, sort of a thermometer board, where we can see how we're progressing at a glance. Sam pointed out as the team stood to leave for the day, "Our final step in designing the game will be to structure the way in which we'll communicate around the scoreboard. A scoreboard is only as good as the communications and actions you create around them. If we don't keep up with the discipline of huddling around these scoreboards, it will all be for naught.